Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. It is Tuesday, December 2nd, and the Islamification of the West is happening everywhere. That is the first sentence of a headline from the American thinker of this piece that you really need to read, which is titled Zoran the Barbarian Takes New York. And of course, this was published back in November after Mamdani was elected the mayor of New York City. But it has kind of pushed to the front this question, and I think it is a good one to continue to focus on. What exactly is happening in American and more broadly speaking, Western civilization that is okay and actually desiring to bring in so many more Muslims into our communities and into our town under the name of, you know, religious freedom and diversity, and suggesting that somehow these two worldviews are compatible. We did a show last week with my friend Shahram Haidian. If you did not hear that program, please go back to AFR.net or go to our app, click on the icon for Jenna Ellis in the Morning, and listen to that full show, because he was a former Muslim, actually born in Iran, and explaining the differences between the Islamic worldview and, of course, the worldview of America that is built upon the Judeo-Christian biblical worldview, and how these two systems are totally incompatible. And Shahram, of course, has become a Christian. He's now a pastor, and it's his life mission really to explain the distinctions and the differences between a false worldview and, of course, the correct one. But one of the key points that we were discussing is how so many people just view Islam as a religion, and so categorize it as something that absolutely at all costs must somehow be protected in the United States, because, you know, we value religious freedom, we have our First Amendment, and, you know, all of those true things. But I think the application is really far off course, because when you actually look at Islam, it is a government system. It is a philosophy that is wholly incompatible with America and with our U.S. Constitution, with the implementation that they would want of, for example, Sharia law. That is completely fundamentally incompatible with Western civilization on a lot of fronts. And yet, the Islamification of the West is still happening everywhere. And Great Britain is one of the examples of that. And I want to welcome in my guest this morning, Father Calvin Robinson, who is formerly from Britain and now lives in the United States and has seen that happening across the West. And good morning, Calvin. And, you know, I think it's really concerning that a lot of Christians actually believe that somehow in order to preserve the West, we need to somehow accept the Islamic worldview and the system of government under the auspices of a religious freedom or religious diversity, when, as my home state, Governor Ron DeSantis, I think very eloquently put it, that this system is just wholly incompatible with our way of life.
Absolutely. And good morning to you, too. What we're doing is we're undermining our own way of life by inviting in people with cultures and ideas and ideologies that are contradictory to our way of life. And we're doing it because we want to be noble. this idea of freedom of religion and freedom of worship is a good idea. The idea that you should be free to worship God or not worship God. You should be free to have a religion or not have a religion. But the idea wasn't, when it was conceived, it wasn't ever thought of that people would have religions and worship God in a way that actually is contradictory to the Christian way of life. When America was founded, pretty much all of the founding fathers were Christian, or at the very least culturally Christian. And it's the same in Britain. When we had the idea of freedom of worship and freedom of religion, you know, for over 1,000 years in England, you had to be a member of the Church of England to stand for office, or as you guys say, to run for office. We got rid of that just under 100 years ago in the name of diversity, thinking, okay, well, you know, let's be more noble, let's allow other people of other faiths and other ideas to run. But we didn't, the idea at the time was that, okay, so people who are Catholic can also run, as well as people who are Church of England, right? People who worship the Christian God in different ways can run for office. That'll be more diverse, that'll be good. But they didn't foresee that there'd be, you know, Mohammedans running, or Hindus, Sikhs, and all kinds of different faiths that are non-Western. And people may say, well, why is that an issue? Why is that a problem? People of different faiths, you know, representing people in Parliament or in Congress. Well, it's a problem because we have to have a homogenous culture. We have to have something that everyone believes in, everyone knows where we're coming from. And in the West, that has been Christendom, that's been Christianity. We've known the values, we've known the belief set, and you can choose to follow it or not follow it. That's the freedom. We get free will. But when we have people, for example, who follow Muhammad entering politics, well, their ideas are very different. As you mentioned, Sharia, which is their own law system, which it circumvents the law of the land. And we can see it happening in real time. You know, in the United Kingdom, there are 85 Sharia courts, which means that they have 85 different jurisdictions of people that do not follow the law of the land. They follow their own internal law. And it may seem benign to people when you hear, what does that mean? Well, it means that to get divorced, you say, I divorce you, I divorce you, I divorce you, and then it's done, rather than having to file paperwork. But actually, things like that do matter, because then they go on to marry someone else. And by the law of the land, the paperwork in the registry office shows that they're already married, so they're performing adultery as well as polygamy. You know, these are sins, but they're also illegal. And so there's a reason that we have laws, and it's so that we can all understand where we're coming from, and we have a shared commonality of ideas, culture, and faith. And without that, things start to fall apart. And, you know, that is a small example, but there are bigger examples, such as what happens if someone gets married to someone that you don't like. And in our culture, you know, there's a certain age limit to getting married, and after that, people are free to marry whomever they choose. But in different cultures, if someone marries someone outside of their faith, it's quite appropriate for them to have what they call an honor killing, to kill that person, because they see it as apostatizing. Of course, in the West, we see that as abhorrent, but to them, that's normality. And so we have to say, this is not okay. We don't agree with this. This is counter to our way of life. There are many, many, many such things that we would disagree with in the West that people do in different cultures and in different countries. But we've, for a long time, known that we are a Christian culture. We are called Christendom. Obviously, recently we call ourselves the West, and that's part of another problem. But we've understood where we're all coming from. And without a shared set of values, a shared set of ideas that people can choose to follow or not follow directly, you know, if people choose to worship God or not worship God, but people still know who we are as a people. And without that, everything falls apart.
It's so well said. And what you're describing is ordered liberty, and we have to have order if we are to function as a society that is under one law, one jurisdiction, and one common understanding of how we enact justice, how we live. And of course, you know, within that there is certain elements of choice and freedom and free will and all of that. But ordered liberty, even the smallest example of that is our traffic laws. I mean, imagine if everyone, according to their religious belief, was free to drive on the highways however they preferred. Well, we would have utter chaos, and we would ultimately have a lot of harm to a lot of people, because no one would understand who was going where or how to stop or how to interact with each other or how to have an ordered society, because everyone is just driving according to his own belief. And we have to have ordered liberty so that we can function as a society. And ordered liberty has always meant that we are a society founded on the Judeo-Christian worldview, and that is the basis of our law and our order. And yet, when you mention, you know, we're calling ourselves the West now instead of Christendom, that is so apt because that has inherently secularized this view of what it is we're doing here in America and across across Christendom. And I actually really like going back to that phraseology.
Yeah, I love it. We've got to, wherever we can, we've got to cling on to our old traditions because all of us are susceptible to modernization and modernity, and all it does is waters things down. You know, I was looking, obviously I'm a Christian pastor, I was looking for some Christian hymns recently. I was looking for some Christmas songs, carols and hymns, and I was having to sift through all the ones that are secular. And so people are producing Christmas songs that don't mention Christ. And the whole purpose of Christmas is Christmas is a celebration of Christ's nativity, him being born, his first coming, and us anticipating his second coming. But people think it's appropriate to make songs for that time of year because everyone's joyful at that time of year. But the people that aren't Christian are making songs that don't recognize Christ. And so they become common, they become popular songs. And then before you know it, people are celebrating Christmas without any thought of Jesus Christ. And it's the same with everything we do in our lives. Everything should be directed towards our God. And if we live in a Christian country where we believe in a Christian God, we should acknowledge that he is the ultimate arbiter of truth, order, liberty, all of these things that you've just been talking about. You know, the Christian idea of freedom is actually very much the opposite of what we believe freedom to be today. Freedom is submission to God and to his good order. And once we live within that order, we are freer. We are the freest we'll ever be. But the modern argument would be actually freedom is freedom to do everything we want, freedom from every consequence. And of course, we know that's not freedom. That's slavery to sin. But the language has been adapted over the years. You know, even freedom of religion. The word religion at one point used to mean the way we believe in the one true God. It was implied the Christian God, but it was very explicit as religion was belief in God. And now, in the 21st century, freedom is someone who has a belief structure, a set of ideas. It's like, this is why we have things like satanic clubs popping up in high schools, for goodness sake, and colleges. And people think, well, we have to respect their freedom of religion. No, we don't have to respect their freedom of religion at all. We have to respect the freedom to follow God or not follow God. But we don't have to respect the idea that someone could follow the devil. That's objectively evil. And it's the undermining of our language. So one of the words is freedom. One of the words is Christendom, being, you know, walked into the West. One of the ones is a very well-meaning one. We've used it on this call a couple of times, a Judeo-Christian. You know, the West was founded on Christian principles. America was a Christian country. In Christian countries, Jewish people are freer than anywhere else in the world, as are most other people. People are free because the Christian idea does take on board a lot of the Old Testament, but it's also the New Testament, which is about enhancing morality. It's about saying it's no longer not good enough to just not sleep around. It's now important to not think about sleeping around. You know, the Christian morality is a step further. But what we do is we add a caveat to it, and then that says, okay, well, it doesn't actually matter if you're Christian or not, just generally Abrahamic. And then when we go from Judeo-Christian, it's very easy to go from more Abrahamic religions, and that's how you get Islam being pushed in through the back door. And so we have to be very careful about the words we're using and make sure we're explicitly Christian in all things if we can.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important point as well in terms of the language that we use and if we understand what we mean by that, and then we can also explain in a conversation with someone who we, whether we're debating or a conversation or whomever we're engaging with, that they also understand that definition, because you're absolutely right. And I'm speaking with Calvin Robinson, my special guest this morning, and you can find him on X, on Instagram, on all the platforms, and I'd really encourage you to follow him because he has a lot of really insightful and great content coming from the Christian worldview and the perspective of truth. But when we talk about, you know, some of these words like freedom, like as you were talking about this, I was reminded, of course, of the very, very popular Disney song from the movie Frozen. And, you know, Elsa, the ice princess, is singing, you know, let it go. And as all the little girls do. And when she sings, no right, no wrong, no rules for me, I'm free. And that phrase has always really bothered me in the sense of, You know, that is utterly false. When people are talking about freedom, we don't mean that there's absolutely no restraint, there's no authority, there's no order. I can simply do whatever I want. That's freedom. That is a false definition of freedom. That is actually perverting freedom. And it is perverting the system of authority and the ultimate source of authority, which, of course, we know is God himself. And when we secularize that, in any way, I mean, we started with the secular humanist view to suggest that America is just a social contract theory, and anything that we get together in our own will in man, we can collectively determine the measurable difference between right and wrong, good and evil. Then we sink so far as to say, well, the individual doesn't even have to agree with the collective. We can now self-determine, and somehow self-government has now been translated to mean this perverted idea of freedom. And so when we're using all of these terms, as you've mentioned, we have to be precise in the correct definitions and understand what that means. And that's very true as well for when we're talking about a Judeo-Christian worldview, because we don't mean that that Judaism is the same as Christianity, or especially, and I just want to underscore this point that you mentioned, that the Abrahamic view encompasses Islam, because that has been the way that a lot of the people who want diversity and the Muslims themselves have backdoored this into the overall view of the West, because they've suggested that because Ishmael came from Abraham, that somehow the Abrahamic view also birthed Islam, which is utterly and completely false if you go back to scripture. What we mean and have always meant by the Judeo-Christian view is that without the Old Testament, we would not have a New Testament. And it is not that we have completely rejected the Old Testament. It's that we understand the New Testament in the person of Christ, the Messiah. He came to fulfill the Old Testament. And so we live, and this is why I am a dispensationalist, because we live in a new dispensation of the law, where you're absolutely right that we don't follow the old Judeo way of salvation and the old way of the priesthood. We don't follow any of the Old Testament law that was given just specifically to the nation of Israel. We now live under a new covenant. And so we can say rightly that this is a Christian nation and this is a Christian worldview. But when we do attach that term Judeo, we have to be precise as to the history of what that means, and also that it doesn't mean a multi-pronged faith or a multi-pathway to Christ and to truth, because that has led to kind of this pluralistic idea of a religious view, and that religion itself can coexist in a society that is built on Christian, specifically, values, Christian order, Christian law, Christian authority. And that this diverse view of religion, because of the First Amendment, we can somehow have a diverse view of law and order and of belief systems that can work simultaneously and coherently somehow together. And that's utterly false. And so we need to take a break here, but I want to I'm going to hold Calvin Robinson into the next segment, because I want to talk about, when we come back, this whole idea of our First Amendment here in this country and this idea of religious liberty and what that actually means biblically and from the founder's perspective, and what that meant overall if we look at the history of what, you know, we've termed as the West or Christendom, and how the application of that now has I think been completely also perverted and has led to this rise of Islamification. And so we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. In the meantime, in the break, go and follow Calvin Robinson on all social media platforms. You'll be very happy that you did. We'll be right back with more. We're living in a time when truth is under attack. Lies are easy to tell, easy to spread, and easy to believe. But truth? Truth is costly. And nowhere is the cost greater than for mothers in crisis. When a woman is told abortion is her only option, silence and lies surround her. But when she walks into a preborn network clinic, she's met with compassion, support, and the truth about the growing life inside her. That moment of truth happens through a free ultrasound, and it's a game changer. When a mother sees her baby and hears that heartbeat, it literally doubles the chance she will choose life. Preborn Network clinics are on the front lines, meeting women in their darkest hour, loving them, helping them choose life, and sharing the truth. Friend, this is not the time to be silent. It is the time for courage, for truth, and for life. Just $28 provides one ultrasound and the opportunity for a mother to see her baby to help her choose truth and choose life. Please donate today. Call #250 and say baby. That's #250 baby, or give online at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, and I am here with my special guest, Father Calvin Robinson, and we are talking about the Islamification of Christendom. And I'm going to start using that word instead of just the West, because I don't want to secularize my vocabulary, and I think Christendom actually is the more appropriate word. And so I have learned something today on the program, and I hope that you are as well. And I think that as we are talking about this this entire scope of the problem, we need to also focus on a correct view of what, at least here in America, our First Amendment in terms of religious freedom protects, and also what it doesn't. Of course, this has been further complicated, the history of it, in terms of constitutional law with the 14th Amendment, which absolutely shifted the legal framework in terms of incorporating the Bill of Rights to the states. Originally, it was just, as the First Amendment says, Congress shall make no law. And so it didn't originally apply to the states in the same way. And now that has gotten completely convoluted. But like so many other things in our law, especially over the last 100 years or so, so much of the legal precedent has focused on incorporating a lot of these secular ideas into our law and our order and our tradition that has led to more and more and more chaos. And so part of the problem, Calvin, I think, is that we have not historically been clear in preserving those boundaries and contours of what, for example, religious liberty and religious freedom, when we're talking about the definition, the proper definition of freedom, means in the context of our law and order and what it doesn't.
Oh, there we go. Sorry, there, there are two points to this. There are two sides. On the personal side, people are lonelier, people are more unhappy, people are more isolated than they've ever been. And that is because they're chasing personal happiness. They're chasing that individual happiness. And you hinted at it in the last segment with the Anna or Elsa from Frozen's idea of freedom. And that's very much the cultural capital of the moment, that to be free, we must be free from all consequences. We must be free to do as we choose, and then we will be the happiest we can ever be. And of course, the American dream is the pursuit of happiness. And put all these things together in the zeitgeist, and what it means is people are chasing something they can never actually achieve. We can never achieve happiness. Happiness is a fleeting emotion. And if that's your goal, then of course you'll always be unhappy, because you may get happiness if it's for a moment, if it's whatever it may be, accomplishing something or achieving something or owning something. But the moment you've done that, it's done. It's over. So you have to find something else to aim for. And this is the problem with chasing that kind of freedom, whereas the scriptures teach us that actually true freedom is submission to God. And what that means is living in his good order. And when we look back to Genesis in the Bible, we find that when he created the world, he called it good. And he created us and called us good. And then things fell apart. And so we should aim to get back to where we were before the fall. And people think, you know, even in today's conversation, Elon Musk is talking about we'll never have to work again with AI and robots and stuff. It's like, no, that's not a world we want to be in. We'll all be miserable. Even before the fall, man was designed to work. All that the fall introduced was making it toil and labor. But before that, we were still designed to cultivate this land that we've been given to steward. Our whole purpose is living, you know, with one with the world, but not in one with the world in the way the climate extremists would say that, oh, we have to kill ourselves off so the world can thrive. No, the world is here for us. The world is here for our benefit, so that we can eat the animals, so that we can live within nature and enjoy the beauty and the goodness and the truth of it all. We can find God's revelation within nature itself. It's a good thing when we embrace it. But part of that is work for men. And so to run away from it isn't free. And so on the second hand of that, we have the, not the personal aspect, but the governmental aspect, the institutional aspect. And we hear quite often from people, yeah, well, you know, the state should be entirely separate from the faith. The, you know, separation of church and state is how we become a free people and this, that, and the other. It's like, no, no one's ever said that. There's never been the idea. You know, the phrase of the separation between church and state came from Roger Williams, who was the founder of Rhode Island. And he was talking about a very specific example of protecting one thing from the other. That got developed by John Locke, of course, a man from England, but with American history, who wanted to make sure that the government could never have jurisdiction over souls. And that's very important, because the church has jurisdiction over souls. We collectively are the body of Christ. We are the church. And the state cannot say anything or judge anything to do with someone's soul. And so the idea of separation of church and state was protecting the church from the state. It was at no point saying that we shouldn't have any implementation of church within the state. And that's what we should have, because true freedom comes from our knowledge of God and God's laws, God's divine order. And so what we would like to see, ideally, as Christians, is Christians in office, Christians running for Congress, running for House representative, who can bring a Christian moral compass into legislation that's being created. And so that the legislator and the jurist and the jurisprudence and all of it is, in fact, Christian in ethics, in morality, and that's how we get true freedom, but living within Christ's good order.
Yeah, and this is where I also see, Calvin Robinson, the clash between not just what the secular progressive leftists have espoused for decades and longer, but also a clash between what the far right has done to also, I think, pervert this understanding of the conservative tradition. Because when we are talking about wanting limited government and less big government, that somehow has translated in our modern language to say that we should not have government intrusion in anything that we do, because then somehow we are less free. And so we've bought into this notion on the right that more freedom means more self-authority to literally do whatever we want. And so if there's any restraint, outward restraint whatsoever, or authority over us, then that is necessarily, under that paradigm, a bad thing or harmful or less American. And so you get this, yeah, this kind of view of, you know, the man in his castle, get off my lawn and I can do whatever I want on my own property. Nobody can tell me what to do because I have sole ownership over everything that I do. And the less restraint is ultimately better. But that actually contradicts the Christian worldview that submission to the appropriate authority, and who that authority is obviously determines what the question is, because as you mentioned, the church, yeah, is the authority over souls. The civil government is the authority over a well-ordered liberty in society. And parents should be the authority over children. Husbands should be the authority over wives. I mean, we see that there is proper authority. God should be the authority over the husband, certainly. I mean, he's not just free to do whatever he wants. And yet we see that even on the right, we haven't been able to stand up for ordered liberty as much in the 21st century, because I think we have bought into this false notion that limited government somehow means that any authority is a wrongful infringement upon my freedom.
That was very well articulated. Obviously, our Lord had something to say on this. He said, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. And the idea being there that some things we have to submit to the state and some things we have to submit to the church, but we have to submit. We can't live our lives without submitting. I think Thomas Jefferson put it very succinctly when he said, the legitimate powers of government reach actions only and not opinions. And I think that's a good idea because the government, we don't want the government, there's certainly a line, we don't ever want the government to impede upon our thoughts. And that's what we're seeing in Great Britain right now, where people are being arrested for silent prayer, you know, things that are happening in their own heads, for goodness sake. But our actions do matter. And so for a good example would be all Christians should agree that abortion should be outlawed. We shouldn't be ever allowed to kill our own offspring. That is a grave evil of our time. But people would, on the other opposing side will say, well, what about freedom of, you know, body or autonomy or whatever? Like, there is a line there, and the government can say, this is an action, not an opinion, and it's an action that is objectively evil and abhorrent, and therefore we're going to outlaw it. So there are some areas of our lives we do want government. Of course, I do tend to agree that a smaller government is usually better, but that's because all power wants more power, and we have to make sure there are levels of accountability. And you made a great point in that where a husband it has authority over the wife, and the wife has authority over the children. But that doesn't mean that the husband is free to do whatever he chooses. He also has accountability because God has authority over him. And that's the crux. That's the big issue there. Because up until very, very recently in human history, most places were kingdoms. Most places had a king. And we understood that the king had, most earthly authority, but he was always subject to the authority of God. We believed in the divine right of kings. And so when a king was governing his land, his kingdom, he knew that he would be held accountable on Judgment Day by Jesus Christ. And that meant that it affected how he governed. Of course, they didn't always get it right because human beings are fallen and we're all susceptible to sin. And so we've had good kings and bad kings. But the point being that the king is not the ultimate highest authority. Jesus is. And everyone needs to be able to look up to a higher authority. The problem we have now in the secular world is that power figures think they are the ultimate authority and they have no accountability and they can do whatever they choose. And that's where you get oppression. That's where you get tyranny. That's where you get people's rights being impeded upon. So there's definitely a line there between the state and the individual or the family, and between thought and action, and between government and church. There's always a line, but the point is we're supposed to discern it, not run away from it entirely.
Absolutely. And this is where, when we first started this conversation about the Islamification of Christendom, and now we are getting, I think, to even more of the heart of the contradiction of why these two systems are fundamentally incompatible, because they look to a completely different and distinct authority. And if it would be like a military soldiers on the battlefield, if they answered to a completely different and contradictory authority in terms of their orders, they couldn't carry out a cohesive mission. If you have a separate and different authority structure that you answer to and that you're accountable to, and everyone isn't agreed upon the source of authority and who is ultimately that arbiter, then you end up in chaos. And so what America did at our founding, and why we are a Christian nation, even if not everyone is saved or believes in the person of Jesus Christ as Messiah and all of the things that are part and parcel to the Christian life, the founders understood and recognized that the law of nature and of nature's God is the ultimate authority structure, and we cannot legislate our way out of that. I was on an interview yesterday talking about the whole issue of same-sex marriage. And I said, well, you know, this is, regardless of whether or not you believe in it from a moral or Christian framework, we don't even have to reach that argument before we can argue why not only is it unconstitutional, but also that it's just against the laws of nature. And empirically, we can just see that that's true, because there is no system or there is no opportunity for a male and a male to have a child and to procreate. And so there is no system in which nature allows the union of two same-sex individuals. And one of the things I think where we have gotten off track as Christians is that we are sometimes arguing too soon the Christian biblical morality from a religious perspective, that we almost have to proselytize or evangelize first before we argue for the truth of the fact that we are a Christian nation. And that has become very problematic, because I can argue, and we should argue, that we are a Christian nation regardless of whether the individual that we're talking to is a Christian or not. And that has caused, I think, a lot of the problems where we as Christians have gone to diversity and tolerance and this false view of freedom as the answer, because we see this as just a religious framework instead of understanding that the authority of the laws of nature and of nature's God.
I mean, I can't even add to that. that's perfectly put. We do need to appreciate that we are a Christian nation, we are a Christian people, and that the only time the Bible ever mentions tolerance is to say, do not tolerate evil. We've been persuaded upon that we must all be more tolerant now, and that makes us, it's virtue signaling, isn't it? It makes us look like nice people, makes us look like good people. There's nothing good about tolerating evil. And so if an invasive ideology comes into your land and tries to take over and tries to implement its own legal system and tries to have its way with your young girls, etc., you can push back and say, no, this is evil, we don't want that. It doesn't matter if someone says you're not being tolerant, it doesn't matter if someone says you're not being diverse or inclusive or equitable. These things are these are religious to a new religion. They're not Christian ideas, not Christian virtues. They are the woke virtues, and actually they're harmful to a Christian land. You know, there has to be a degree of homogeneity. There has to be a degree of oneness. And people can opt out of that. So I'm not saying that everyone must become Christian. It would be great if everyone did, because it would mean everyone is saved, and that would be a wonderful thing. But of course, with free will, people have the right, the freedom to reject God if they choose. And we must respect their rejection of him whilst also hoping and praying that they come around. But so what I'm saying is, we can't force people to become Christians, but that doesn't mean we can't keep the land a Christian land and the laws Christian laws, and keep the nation a Christian nation. The people within the nation have the freedom to love God or not to love him yet. But that doesn't mean we can forget who we are as a people.
Absolutely. And so in just the last few minutes I have with you, and this conversation has already gone by so quickly, and I appreciate you sticking around for so long this morning. This is such an important conversation. I think that the beginning of righting this ship actually starts with the Christians, to understand that we need to, of our own free will, not just submit in the sense of the church and of recognizing the church's authority, which unfortunately many Christians don't. We say that we're Christians, but we go to church and we don't actually submit to church discipline, to the authority of the church, to, you know, all that entire structure, but also understanding that we need to submit ourselves to the lawful authority, as Romans 13 establishes, and we need to be the ones who evidence that and who are the examples of that, rather than suggesting that we need to be more free to do whatever we self-determine in our limited framework is best, and rejecting all authority, because then we are not, by way of example, showing the rest of the secular world what it means to be under the authorities which God has established. And I think that in Romans 13, there's a lot of misunderstanding of what that is. It's not just you submit to whatever authority individual happens to be trying to tell you what to do. Obviously, there are circumstances where the individuals or the government, like we saw, for example, during COVID, were telling people to do things that were morally or legally wrong. Of course, you don't submit to an unlawful authority, but the authorities which God has established are the church, the family, and the civil government. And those institutions, we need to bring back a respect for that, and not just looking to man-made institutions, but the future of Christendom is looking to the rightful, appropriate authorities that God has ordained, and arguing and seeking to persuade that God himself is the authority over all.
Have I lost you?
Are you still there? I can hear you.
Well, I can't hear you anymore, Jenna, but if you can still hear me, I think you're absolutely right in your point just then, in that we are called to be a light to the nations. We are called to lead by example and show people about Christ by living in Christ. And you're absolutely right. That means submitting. That means submitting to church authority. Sometimes it means submitting to the authority of the government in all things lawful and right, as the scriptures would teach us. But I think you also touched on another point, important point there, in that family is the basic foundation of society, not the individual. And we need to get back to thinking like that too. How does what I do affect my family and other people's families, rather than how does it affect me personally? And once we get back to that, we'll be in a better place, because it's about service, it's about a duty, it's about an obligation to each other. And we all have that. And on the right, we become hyper-individualists. And on the left, they become hyper-collectivists. And Christians are somewhere in between, actually, where we recognize the collective is important, but we also recognize the individual is important. But the family is the basis of any civil society.
Well said, and I hope that Calvin Robinson can hear me here, but we have to take a break anyway right here, and so I so appreciate his commentary and this conversation, and I hope that, as we are critiquing where we are at in our current society and why we need to protect America, we need to protect the West and Christendom from the Islamification of the West, we need to start with ourselves. And this is actually kind of, I think, become a rightful critique of our own attitudes and our own view of how we view authority, how we live our lives. And we should, as Christians, always be seeking to submit to the rightful authority of Christ himself in all things. And so again, follow Calvin Robinson at Calvin Robinson on X, Instagram, Facebook, all of the platforms. Would really encourage you to do that. And we will be right back with more.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I'm back, and we've been talking about this whole Islamification of the West and the idea of what it means to have ordered liberty, the true and rightful definitions of freedom, of self-governance, of what it means to be a Christian nation. And I want to also touch on one of the things that Calvin Robinson mentioned earlier on in the program, that so many people think that self-governance or liberty and freedom means the right to ultimately be selfish. And that is such an important point to underscore, because that is completely a secular idea. In the true biblical framework and what God ultimately has ordained and established for our good, we never see in Scripture that we are called in any way, shape, or form to be self-centered or to have the desires of whatever we want to pursue, and that equals happiness. And of course, the pursuit of happiness, as a line, of course, from our founders and our founding documents, that has been implied and I think also perverted to somehow mean that pursuit of happiness means that I get to, as an American, pursue whatever brings me joy or whatever will make me happy. And I get to choose for myself whatever I think is the best for my life. Now, to an extent, of course, that is accurate, in the sense that the government shouldn't be telling me what my vocation should be, where I should live, when, or if I get married, or how many kids to have, or, all of those kinds of things. We have options. We have choice. We have those aspects of freedom. But it's within this broader system of understanding that God's authority and submission to his will is what ultimately leads us to our most prosperous and our most productive and ultimately our most joyful lives, because you can't ultimately have joy separate and apart from a life in Christ. And so you can pursue, of course, fleeting moments of happiness. You can have, some sense of gratification or satisfaction in some of these temporal things. But ultimate true and lasting joy comes from submission to the authority of Christ and living our lives in the way that he has ordained and commanded. And so this whole idea, I think for Christians, this whole idea of self-government and what it means to pursue happiness is that we have the right in this country to do what God wills for our lives. And so when we talk about this in a government framework, it's that the government is not the authority that God ordained to tell me what ministry I should participate in, how I should raise my children in the fear and admonition of the Lord, what church I should attend, you know, all of those personal individual decisions. And that leads to the most blessing, of course, in my life. But that doesn't mean that just because the government can't tell me what to do on those things, and I have the freedom in and of myself to make those choices, that I am completely free from all authority. See, we have replaced a lot in a Christian framework, falsely, we've replaced this idea of government authority that the secularists would like to impose in this kind of totalitarian view with self-governance, which is also a false view. And so we are getting basically a secular framework on both sides. And I was talking to Ed Vitagliano and the guys on today's issues. I think it was last week. And we were kind of talking about this, this whole political spectrum. And I was saying on that show, and I've said this for a while, that the whole political spectrum, if you think about it and kind of picture it in your mind, a lot of people think of the political spectrum as linear. So you have this line and you have the far left, you know, obviously to your left, and then you have the far right to your right. And it's kind of just all along the same plane. And moderate or centrist, of course, is in the center. And so traditionally, conservatism and Republicans have been more to the right, where Democrats and leftism have been more to the left, and that's where we get those terms. And it doesn't really, if we're looking at it on just a linear plane, it doesn't really look like anything is necessarily better or worse. And so what exactly are we conserving if we don't want to be centrist and moderate in the middle? Then if we're just a little bit to the right or a little bit to the left, kind of what difference does it make, right? So I want you to picture this differently, because I think of the political spectrum, and I think a better picture of this is actually a bell curve, because the more, if we are thinking of the morality of the laws of nature and of nature's God as ultimately what we are conserving, what we are striving toward as a more moral and well-ordered society, that is what we are conserving at the top of this bell curve. We can fall off and have a false view and go down that slippery slope all the way to the left and keep going, that is further and further away of what we're trying to conserve. And we can also do the same thing on the right, because if we go further and further to the right, which, you know, the furthest point on the right is total anarchy, like no government at all, then we see how this view of self-governance, meaning I don't want any authority, government get off my lawn, I don't want the government to have any moral restraint over me, there has to be total freedom, I'm man in my castle and get off my lawn, you know, all of those things, that's actually further and further away from the view of government and authority that we need to be conserving, which isn't the centrist or kind of, you know, moderate view. It's the authority of God himself. And if we understand the institutions that God ordained for our good and the truth about authority, we should willingly submit to the contours and the parameters of those authorities. Why? For our good. Just like the example that I gave a little bit ago in this program of how we all, other than, you know, the few people that choose to break the law when they drive, we all submit to the rules of the road because we understand that we have to in order to have a well-ordered system of traveling. For all of us to navigate in the individual ways that we're going and wherever we happen to go for whatever reason doesn't matter, we still have to obey the laws of the road in order to not cause harm to ourselves or others. And so the same, so we submit to that framework of authority. And in the same way, what we are conserving and the challenge, I think, for our Christian audience here at AFR is to not think of authority in terms of the government as so limited that it's actually at a disadvantage or it somehow is a contradiction to our freedom. Authority is good, just like parental authority is a good thing. The husband's authority over the wife is a good thing. God's authority over the husband is a good thing. The church's authority over the Christian is a good thing. Obviously, can those authorities be abused? Yes. Man is never going to be perfect, but those institutions, when borrowing the legitimate authority of the delegated authority that God has provided, those institutions then are meant for our good because they set up guardrails and parameters that are for our good. So we need to be willingly looking at the authority that God has ordained and understanding that the definition of freedom is to be free to do what God's will ultimately requires of us. As always, you can reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.